Welcome back to Debate 98 with the major party candidates for governor in Minnesota. It's time now for another round of questions from our media panel. We'll begin with Michelle Lee, who has a question for Mr. Ventura.
Mr. Ventura, many Minnesotans want any state budget surplus to be returned to the taxpayers right away. What are your thoughts on maintaining an appropriate reserve fund and on tax-related changes such as reducing property taxes and income taxes, or would you just simply give the money back?
Well, I am the only major party candidate that stood at the steps of the Capitol when the $4 billion was sitting there and stated give the money back, because it's one thing for government to budget. They go on the floor of the legislature and they tell us what it's going to take to run the government. A budget surplus is above and beyond that. That is not what they said it took to run. So I support giving the money back, and in the future I support putting in a trigger mechanism, because we saw what happened last time. If you let the legislature get their hands on this money, it's not coming back. They're going to spend it. So I support a trigger mechanism be put in place so that the legislature cannot get their hands on that money, and it should go back to the taxpayers. It's no different than if the power company overcharges you by $400, you'd expect to get that money back. And again, I'm the only candidate that stood at the steps of the Capitol and said, give it all back.
What about a rainy day fund? What would
we already have one? I think they raised it to the tune of close to $1 billion now. You know, it's not drizzling out yet. We're still getting surplus.
Okay. All right. Mr. Coleman.
Yeah, we do have a rainy day fund of $1 billion, and I'm putting another $300 million in and still delivering over 4 years a $3.1 billion tax cut. But the reality is we take in over $23 billion biannually. And so what we need to do when money comes in over and above that $23 billion, you do need to give it back. Government should learn to do what moms and dads do, and that is live within your means. And so I have a trigger mechanism. In addition, a permanent tax cut. And differing, by the way, from the Attorney General's, because I anticipate a decline, perhaps the recession. He doesn't. And if it happens, you've got a big hole in your budget, Skip. Ted Mondale said that, $1 billion hole. I anticipate inflation at 2%. He anticipates at less than 1%. If it's more than that, you've got a big hole in your budget. And government raises taxes when they got big holes. The Attorney General will raise your taxes and spend too much. I have delivered a tax cut with an ample reserve and working with the possibility of a decline in the economy.
Okay. Mr. Humphrey.
You know, I find it most interesting that my opponents here are able to tell you all of what they want to do, but they can't quite seem to produce a detailed blueprint piece of paper that's called a budget. I know in my office and at my home, we work out on a piece of paper what our priorities are. I'm the only candidate that has produced that kind of detailed budget. Now, what is that budget all about? $1.4 billion of taxes returned permanently, not just one-timers, but permanently, income tax and property tax relief. But we also invest in critical areas of education and health care, making sure that we reduce and eliminate the violence in people's lives. That's what's critical. Now, what I don't quite understand is when Mr. Coleman comes along and says he's all for choice in higher education. Well, I'm for choice in higher education. We provide those dollars. But then he says not about in K-12. What is he talking about, having some kind of other siphoning of dollars off in the form of some kind of voucher-like plan?
Thank you, Mr. Humphrey. Our next question comes from media panelist Jeff Passolt and goes first to Mr. Coleman.
Yeah, I'd like to ask you a question about the working family. We hear the term tossed about these days in every political process. How do you characterize a working family, and what do you plan on doing for them? And should your characterization of a working family fall short of a certain level, what happens to all those other people that aren't in that category?
That's a very good question. First, Jeff, all working families deserve to have their taxes cut, deserve to have a greater opportunity to work jobs. And again, I'm the only person standing up here that's cut taxes and cut bureaucracy and help create jobs. We've done that in St. Paul. There is, by the way, in my tax plan, and the Attorney General keeps saying he's got a budget. No, he's got about 26 pages of spending promises. He doesn't have a budget. There's a $23 billion state budget. He doesn't have that. He's got spending promises. In his tax plan, by the way, he says all working families, and it's in the lower, the 6% bracket, that means families that make $24,000 or less. In my tax plan, I cut taxes for for both the first and the second bracket, going up to 100,000. Families that make 30,000, 40,000, 50,000, mom and dad working together making 40,000 each, those are all working families. And under the Coleman plan, all working families get their taxes cut. Under the Humphrey plan, if you make under 24,000, you get your taxes cut. And then the only other tax is if you do things that government says you should do, and then they give you a little money back.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman.
Mr. Humphrey, I see you shaking your head, so obviously you want to respond.
Well, I think we need to just get the facts right. Let's understand. I am the only candidate that has produced a budget. If Mr. Coleman wants to hand me his copy of his budget and show it to you as well, I'd be more than happy to at least receive it so that I can give a comparison like any other voter ought to have the opportunity. But let's talk about these tax cuts. First and foremost, because everybody contributed to the surplus, everyone should get a tax cut back. Under the Humphrey plan, every single taxpayer gets a tax cut. But there are many more. A working family, you asked about. I think working families all the way up to $120,000 of joint income probably need, at some point in time, some help and assistance if they're dealing with children in the early years in child care, maybe taking care of a son or daughter going on to beyond high school to college, and maybe trying at the same time to take care of a senior parent. Those are the kinds of people that I'm talking about. Mr. Coleman, on the other hand, if you use just his tax cut, some people get $130,000, but most people get $33.
Thank you, Mr. Humphrey. Mr. Ventura.
Well, first of all, I'm the candidate who comes from the private sector. I haven't been cashing government checks. I don't have the benefit of that nice government retirement plan, the nice government health care, and I believe that the key to it all is reducing the size of government. You can't cut taxes till you reduce the size of government. It's that simple. And my two opponents here, I believe Skip Humphrey, he's your traditional tax and spend Democrat. Mr. Coleman, he's spend and tax. And what that means is credit card. That means put it later. When you create a big bond, you can cut it initially, but you put it on a credit card. Somebody will have to pay up later. The bottom line is you must cut down the size of government before you can cut down taxes. And again, how simple it would have been to give the surplus back, but now because we're a couple weeks away from an election, my two opponents are going to cut taxes. But where were they when that $4 billion surplus was there, along with bonding us to the tune of $1 billion, record-setting both?
Thank you, Mr. Ventura. Jim Newman has our next media question, which goes first to Mr. Humphrey.
All right, candidates, we all know that this campaign is about what's good for Minnesota, but it's also about votes. The election's only, what, less than 3 weeks away? Latest CARE TV, St. Paul Pioneer Press, NPR poll shows that Skip Humphrey with 44% of the vote, Coleman with 31%, and Ventura with 15%. So, Skip, are you just going to coaster on in?
Are you kidding? I'm four votes behind, and I'm going to be out reaching out to meet every single voter that I possibly can. One of the key roles to understand, you've got to establish who's the boss here. The boss is the people. And I need to hear what the boss has to say and what they want their government, their public enterprise, to do. I've been listening very hard. I'm pleased to see that that poll also indicates that education is the principal concern, public education. That's what I've been trying to focus on and will focus my attention as governor. We need to have a strong workforce. That's bottom line what is going to drive the opportunities in the future for this state. But the key engines for that drive are going to be our families. And that's why we need to support them in the earliest possible years as they are beginning those families and allowing them to continue to have the resources and the energy all the way through beyond high school and on into the senior years when parents are some parents are taking care of their parents. That's what's critical.
Thank you, Mr. Humphrey. Mr. Ventura.
Well, first of all, the only poll that counts is November 3rd. All the rest are meaningless. But I will say this. Isn't it interesting now what's happening? 10-12 debates have been canceled because my two opponents don't seem to want to show up and debate issues. They want to spend money on nifty little ads on television and all that with sound bites. But let's look at what the Democrats and Republicans have done. 50% of Minnesotans don't vote. As a veteran, that appalls me because there's veterans that have spilled their blood and given their lives for that ability to vote. Look at the last primary election. I had no opponent. Less than 20% chose to participate. This is a chance now for the voters to step out, watch their vote count, watch a difference be made, and send a ripple across the world by electing Jesse Ventura governor of the state of Minnesota. And again, it's pathetic that half of Minnesotans don't vote. Why? The Republicans and Democrats have turned them off to the process.
Mr. Coleman, the numbers, Skip 44, U 31, that's a 13-point gap. Got any little, I wouldn't hesitate to call them tricks, but any new moves coming up in the next couple of weeks?
It's not a matter of new moves. All right, listen, I'm the underdog. You got to work harder. But there's such a clear contrast in vision in this. I mean, listen to the Attorney General. There's a program at every stage of development, from the earliest years to the middle years to the senior years. The bottom line, if you deliver on all those, you're going to spend, raise taxes, kill job growth, kill opportunity. I offer a very different path, and I believe that's the path Minnesota will choose. And I offer it not by rhetoric, but by having done it, giving people greater freedom by cutting their taxes, cutting unnecessary regulation, putting more cops on the street, being a voice for choice in education, quality education for every kid. When you do that, that is the path to Minnesota's future. I do not believe that Minnesotans will step back into the tax and spend era. I think they're going to move to a brighter future, a future of more freedom and more opportunity with less taxes, less burdensome regulation, and much more hope and opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Michelle, the next question is yours and goes first to Mr. Ventura.
Mr. Ventura, my next question involves treaty rights. What is your position on Native American treaty rights, sovereignty, and Native American gambling casinos?
Well, my version is this. I commend the Native Americans, because whoever represented them did a heck of a job. They did an outstanding job. I'm not sure who represented Minnesota. Maybe we'll get the answer in a few minutes. But I think that definitely, you know, there should have been sunset clauses put in there. There should have been the ability to renegotiate. And as far as, again, I feel under the Constitution, everyone should be treated equally. And everyone should have an equal, fair advantage to participate, whatever it might be. As far as gambling goes, in my opinion, life is a gamble. The stock market's a gamble. How you spend your amusement money should be up to you, not necessarily up to government. But isn't it ironic that we have government in gambling? You have the lottery there. The government's allowed to gamble. The Native Americans are allowed to gamble. But the other people cannot. Even the churches are allowed to gamble. Bingo. But yet, no other gambling can take place. And let's look at what happens every Sunday. We prohibit. How many people have 2 and 4 on the next Viking game at the half?
Thank you, Mr. Ventura. Mr. Coleman, the question goes next to you.
First, I start with an appreciation, admiration for some of the things Marge Anderson does at Mille Lacs, building infrastructure. But the reality is we should have equal rights for all. Equal rights for all. It's a strange process we have now. The fact is that the Attorney General did negotiate that compact, and he'll tell you that he argued against what they got. People involved in the negotiation don't say that. He says it. We are one of the only states in which we don't have a right to either reopen that compact, to look at it, to look at the proceeds and the profits that are being made, and provide for a more equitable distribution. The folks in the communities around those casinos, they pay for infrastructure. It's their tax burden. And we should be sitting down with the tribes, sitting down and reopen that compact. We don't have that right now. It was a failure there by the Attorney General at that time. But we really should work hand in hand with the Indian community to reopen those compacts, to make sure that there is a more equitable distribution of huge profits that are being made. And then we should ensure that there are equal rights for all Minnesotans across the board. That would be a much better system.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Coleman.
Mr. Humphrey?
The compacts are in place. They were negotiated by a governor and a legislative commission on behalf of the state of Minnesota. They were negotiated by a representative group of the various tribes within the state of Minnesota. We need to honor those compacts. I made my own recommendations. They weren't always agreed upon. It's no news to anybody that I'm not exactly a big fan of public gambling. That's one of the reasons I wasn't on the commission, folks. But the reality is that we have good, strong compacts, and we now need to work with our Native Americans to see the kind of strong relationships and develop that into even further opportunities of economic development. You have already tried that here in Duluth with Fond du Lac. You've had that kind of working relationship here. I'd like to see it even go further in the education and in the entrepreneurial area. If you take a look what Fond du Lac has done with their community college, it's outstanding. They are providing good services not only to the tribe, but even to law enforcement. It's one of the finest law enforcement training facilities in the country. We need to see more of that.
Your time is up. We have another question from Jeff Passold, and it goes first to Mr. Norm Coleman.
Well, we're right across the bridge from Wisconsin here in Duluth, and you see a lot of mixed traffic out on the street here. And as I was driving to the studio, I couldn't help but notice a lot of Wisconsin license plates. And there were some cars that were much nicer than mine, but it kind of cheeses me a little bit when I figure that guy's paying $40, $45, is that what it is? And I'm paying hundreds for my license plate. Why the difference, and do you plan on changing that?
Jeff, we're taxed too much in Minnesota. Yeah, right. You wake up in the morning, you turn on a light, you pay utility tax, you take a cup of coffee, you got a sales tax, drive to work, you pay a gas tax, go to work, pay an income tax, come home, pay a property tax, turn on TV, pay a cable tax, die, get sick, you pay a health care provider tax, die, you pay a death tax. We're being taxed to death in Minnesota. It's like shooting fish in a barrel, deciding which tax to cut. And look at the economic growth across in Wisconsin. Look at on the other side of the border, in Fargo, Moorhead, the growth in Moorhead, or the growth in Grand Forks. So what we got to do is cut taxes, and I'm doing that. We also got to make sure we don't do what the Attorney General says, is roll back workers' comp reform. You do that. You raise the cost of business in this state, you'll be driving more jobs out of this state. We can't afford to do that. Let's do what I've done. Cut taxes. Start with the income tax. But, Jeff, I mean, I'll be looking at a lot of tax cuts. We're only able to do that if we sustain economic growth. So you don't roll back workers' comp reform. You don't spend, and increase taxes, because that will drive jobs away.
But do you figure out how to keep that license plate down there at $45? That's a redirected you.
Oh, yeah. Jeff, you know, you got to start somewhere. I mean, that would be one. You know, I've started with income tax because we're the second highest income tax state in the nation. So where do you want to start, Jeff? But the key to all of this is, one, starting on cutting taxes, but then keeping a lid on spending, growing economic growth, and then look at other taxes you can cut. But you got to start somewhere. I've cut in the area where we are the second highest in the country. Are we taxing a lot of other areas? Absolutely. But you got to start somewhere. It's got to be real, not spending promises that will raise your taxes.
Mr. Humphrey, is there a chance that the license plate fee could go down in Minnesota if you're elected governor?
Well, I think we certainly have to look at that, but we have to understand what some of the license fees goes for and some of the other areas. You've got to look at the question of whether or not we want an investment in transportation, for example, whether we want to have the kind of Minnesota transportation system that will make a key difference. But bottom line, we need to look also at economic growth. I hear my opponent, Mr. Coleman, talk about the great growth in Wisconsin and the Dakotas. The biggest growth in the entire region is in the state of Minnesota. We have a strong, balanced system, both public and private. And one of the reasons is because we have a strong education system, because we have the healthiest people in the country, because we provide the kind of health care that is so important. I don't like taxes any more than anybody else does, but the reality is that we have to balance this appropriately. I want to cut those taxes on automobiles if I possibly can. In fact, I'm the only person that has a balanced budget that shows that we're actually going to cut the size of the government, and we're going to work at it continuously. No other candidate even comes close to doing that.
Thank you, Mr. Humphrey.
And Mr. Ventura.
I can't wait to see that government get cut with all of them programs, Skip. You know, that's going to be a remarkable feat. But I'll tell you this, Jeff, I bear with you, too. One of my cars cost me, I couldn't even drive it year-round, $950 a year to drive 6 months out of the year in the state of Minnesota. That's absurd. It's ridiculous. I think, using the Democratic philosophy, we should change our license plates here in the state of Minnesota. Shouldn't be 10,000 lakes anymore. It should be 10,000 taxes, because that's what you've got. With the Democratic Party, you've got this elitist attitude that anytime there's a problem, it's government's responsibility to fix the problem by overtaxing us. You're darn right I want to get those taxes down on license plates, and I want to cut down government scope. Let's go back to personal responsibility out there. Every debate I've gone in, and I've been in probably 50 of them this summer, at some point in time, the hand comes out, what's the government going to do for me? Well, every time that hand comes out, it's got money waiting to drop in there.
Thank you, Mr. Ventura. Thank you, media panelists. We have time now for one more question from our studio audience. And this question comes to the candidates from Sharon Finch, representing the American Association of University Women. Her question goes first to Mr. Humphrey.
Minnesota's response to welfare reform is the Minnesota Family Investment Program. The goals of the program are to increase work, reduce poverty, and reduce dependence on public assistance. What would you do to facilitate Minnesota's achieving these goals?
Well, one of the things, and I thank you and I thank the AAUW for also its opportunity to have us debate. One of the things I said was that if in fact individuals are continuing to get their education, I think that that ought not be counted as a credit against them on their 60-day period during the changes of welfare. We want to move people from welfare to work. Bottom line, how you do that is you make sure that they have a solid education, that they have access to quality health care, that they have the resources back in their pockets so that they can continue to have the opportunity to get a good job. The whole goal of this is to have a job so that you can be independent and be able to be self-sustaining. I want to make certain that we can do that, but you also need to support with the kind of efforts of having affordable housing so that people have a place to live while they're moving up that scale, that economic scale of success. If we put all of those tools together and take the God-given talents of an individual, we will see an even greater success than we have today in Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Humphrey. Thanks to our audience for some excellent questions this evening. Oh, Mr. Ventura, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Mr. Coleman, too.
I missed, oh!
There's two of us left here. Yeah.
I saw the red light go on, and I just started right in.
First of all, I think that there is a need for welfare, but it should not be a lifestyle. What we need to do is figure out, have everyone get a job, maybe subsidize them from there from whatever they need, and then as they progress up, they'll go this way. But let's not forget social welfare. We've also got a lot of corporate welfare out there that is far, far more expensive than any social welfare. But you know, you hear Mr. Humphrey talk about education for the welfare people. Well, I'm sorry, but if they're adults, what happened to the first round of education that we provided for them? They didn't take advantage of it. There's a price you have to pay sometimes that you have to learn to live with out there, and the government cannot be the answer to everyone on that. Certainly we want to assist people. We want to help people truly in need, but you cannot help someone that does not want to help themselves. And look at the way welfare was for years and years. If you went out and tried to better yourself and get a job, you were penalized. We can't have a system like that. We need to promote jobs and then assist from there, but make everyone work because that makes us all feel better about it. You know, and tax-free interest loans can cost sometimes $150 million. Could have used that for something else.
We have a unique opportunity for welfare reform in this state because we have jobs. Because, by the way, we have workers' comp reform that we shouldn't change. We're keeping jobs here. Our big challenge is connecting people with those jobs. But we got to make sure the jobs are out there. And Skip, I'm going to get back to it again. You don't have a budget. What you got is spending proposals. Budgets tell people, here's what the Department of Agriculture spends. Here's what we have in state parks. What you got is $5.5 billion of spending promises. And if you live up to those, you're going to raise taxes. You're going to kill job growth, kill opportunity, and then welfare reform gets washed down the drain. The best thing we can do is make sure that folks on welfare have an opportunity to work. A period of time there, you can deal short period daycare education, but ultimately connect them with the job and then make sure that there's opportunities for training to move themselves up. But we do that by cutting taxes. We do that by shaping an environment in which we continue to have job growth in this state, not by more spending, not by higher taxes, not by more regulation, not by driving jobs out of this state.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Again, thanks to the audience for those excellent questions this evening. Gentlemen, it's time now for your closing statements. The order was determined prior to the debate, and Mr. Jesse Ventura will be the first candidate to make his closing statement. You have 90 seconds.
Thank you. First of all, I'd like to remind people that a vote for Jesse Ventura is just that. It is a vote for Jesse Ventura, no one else. It's not a vote against anyone else. And I want Minnesotans to understand something. If we move the clock back 150 years ago, there was a third-party candidate that ran back then, and imagine if the mindset today that voting for a third-party candidate was a wasted vote. We all hear that one. Well, guess what? Abraham Lincoln would have never been elected president of the United States. And I want people to realize, do you know what a wasted vote is? It's not voting your heart and not voting your conscience. And I want to urge people to go out and vote. I realize 50% of Minnesotans have fallen by the wayside. They don't trust the Democrats and Republicans. They think their vote does not count anymore. Well, you can step back this time. When November 3rd comes, I want to see a huge voter turnout. We veterans, we put our lives on the line for that. And it's the simple thing that's equality to all. It doesn't matter how wealthy you are. It doesn't matter the color of your skin. It doesn't matter what religion you are. We all get one. And it's your civic duty to go out and vote, be informed, and I urge everyone else to step forward and make sure these debates happen. Don't let my two candidates get off the hook by canceling debates. They did it on Sunday to over 100 children, 100 high school kids who wanted to participate. These two candidates decided to cancel. Jesse Ventura wanted the debate because that's the way it should be done, debating like right here.
Thank you, Mr. Ventura. Mr. Humphrey, you make the second closing statement.
Thank you. I want to be your governor because I believe this is a good state of Minnesota. But I know working together, we can make it even better, a great place for people to live and to work, to raise a family. I believe I've got the proven leadership and the clear vision to make things happen. As Attorney General, I've taken on the tough fights for you, and we've won for the people of Minnesota, fought tobacco, made sure that deadbeat parents pay their child support, initiated a strike force to fight gangs. As your governor, I want to see that we keep our commitments to Minnesota families. The way we do that is by making sure that our public education system is world class, that we have affordable quality health care for all, that we have violence off of our streets and out of our homes, and most importantly, that we provide permanent income and property tax cuts to help working families. If we do that, we're not only going to make Minnesota the best place to live, we're going to make sure we move Minnesota in the right direction.
Thank you, Mr. Humphrey. Mr. Coleman, 90 seconds for your closing statement.
Thank you. You know, the question in this race all boils down to this. In these challenging times today and perhaps uncertain times of tomorrow, what do Minnesotans need most? They need freedom or do they need government? I'm betting on Minnesota's future on you. It's on freedom. When you cut taxes, you give people economic freedom. You give them hope and opportunity, and you grow jobs. When you cut burdensome regulation, what you do and allow folks in this part of the country to use your natural resources with a common sense environmental approach, what you do is you give people freedom. You give them economic opportunity. And you give parents choice and the opportunity to be involved in their kids' education. You're giving them freedom. When you have safe streets, you give people freedom. And that's what freedom gives you, hope and opportunity. It gives you confidence. It gives you investment, it gives you jobs. You can believe that I'll deliver it because I've delivered it. As mayor of the capital city, we've cut taxes, we've cut unnecessary regulation, we've created thousands of jobs, and there is a greater sense of hope and optimism. The Attorney General offers a path of more government. For every problem, there is a program, and those programs cost money. And when you spend, you raise taxes, and then you lose freedom. Ronald Reagan once said that freedom isn't anything you always have, you've got to fight for it. And it's always one generation from being extinct. Let's not extinguish it in this generation. Let's not go back to more taxes and higher spending. Let's go forward to more freedom. I can deliver that. I have delivered it in the capital city. I will deliver it for St. Paul. I'm Norm Coleman. I understand freedom. I want to be your governor.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. That ends our program. I would like to thank our three candidates for being with us tonight. Jesse Ventura, Skip Humphrey, and Norm Coleman, and wish each of you very well during the final weeks of this campaign. We owe a great deal to our media panelists for their insightful questioning of our candidates tonight. Jim, Michelle, and Jeff, thanks for your work here tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tonight's televised debate would have been impossible without the cooperation of both WDSC-TV and KBJR-TV here in Duluth, who provided not only the studio space, but a great deal of professional and technical expertise. Our local debate coordination was accomplished by Gail Schoenfelder and Marjorie Longstreth and the Voter Service Committee of the League of Women Voters of Duluth. We, too, owe thanks to State League Debates 98 coordinator Liz Nordling and State League President Judy Duffy for their advice and assistance and our generous sponsors. On behalf of the League, KBJR, and WDSE television stations, we ask that you make democracy work in Minnesota on November 3rd by casting your vote in this important election. Good night, everyone.